Good. And I think I need to stay close to this because you're recording me, right? So there's my disclosures. I have nothing to disclose. I have about 5 or 6 slides here to just give you a general overview about refugees and immigrants. I think I'll go through them pretty quickly, given the fact that I suspect most people in the room are kind of aware of this. But I do a lot of these talks around the country, and sometimes people get a little bit confused about a refugee and an immigrant. Immigrants can move freely between borders based on their visas. Refugees, of course, flee a country out of fear of persecution or death and can't go back to their country for fear of persecution or death. Often spend time in a host country for about a decade in a refugee camp until a solution can be found, which is often resettlement into a neutral country. So I just wanted to kind of level set a little bit. Nationally, since we enacted the Refugee Act in 1980, about 3 million refugees have come into the United States. Prior to that, resettlement was more or less ad hoc based on whatever situation was going on around the world, about 80,000 a year coming in now. In New York State, we have 5,000 a year coming in. The majority are coming into upstate New York. New York City itself, cost of living is just too difficult to resettle refugees there. And about 16% are coming into my county, which is Monroe County. A little bit about Rochester, about 17,000 refugees in Rochester. Monroe County is 1.5 million, our greater Rochester area. The city itself is about 300,000, so about 5% of the refugees in Rochester, 5% of the population of Rochester is refugees. A little factoid below it, our county resettles more refugees than 23 states, not 23 states combined, but if you lined up the 52 states and looked at how many refugees are resettled per year, our county would top about 23 states. And this is not unusual around the country. There's been this social experiment going on for about 30 years where small and medium-sized communities have been resettling the bulk of the refugees coming into the United States. If you were to talk to a suburban doctor in my county, they would say refugees, what refugees? And you talk to another doctor in urban Rochester, where everybody's resettling in their neighborhood, and they'll say their clinic is being overran by refugees. So it's definitely pockets in the United States and actually pockets in our county too. And you guys probably know this, just the country of origin is coming in right now. The lion's share is coming in from Bhutan. Still a fair amount of sub-Saharan African countries. Burma has been very active for the last decade. Iraqis are coming in more and more as a result of the war, and a constant stream of Cubans coming in. Again, from community to community, our community is really heavy with Bhutanese currently. There's this initial resettlement just based on the economic circumstances of the community, and then once you see a certain ethnic group kind of growing inside of community, you see more and more coming to that community because there's already a foothold of Bhutanese in our community. So this can vary from community to community. Some commonalities, most don't know English. Most have had poor or no health care in the camps. Most do not understand Western health care, the preventive model. And because of how they survive in these camps, most have poor nutrition. So a little bit about what we did in Rochester in 2008, and the problem I'm going to describe to you is not uncommon for small and medium-sized communities around America. Health centers in general in urban settings have very limited resources. In New York State specifically, Medicaid does not pay for interpreting costs, so we get a double whammy. We not only have to cover the interpreting costs plus the additional resources of taking care of these patients. Historically, they have poor show rates, and the reimbursement rate actually isn't low. It's standard Medicaid reimbursement, but because of the complexity of these patients and the acuity of the visits, and there's so much time that has to go into this visit, it results in poor reimbursement because there's just so much that can be paid on one patient visit. What happens because of this is you start seeing clinics avoiding seeing refugees. And, we're getting federal money. You technically can't say, I'm not going to see this patient. But often what happens is clinics is they block out certain times during the week to see this particular type of patient. When someone calls for an appointment, they say they're not, you know, we don't have an appointment until February of 2013. So it's the equivalent of not seeing these patients. We had one clinic in Rochester that was really dedicated to seeing refugees. They were really committed to the mission. They tried to do things right, and eventually they went bankrupt from doing this kind of care. And again, this is not uncommon around the United States. The end result of this is little or no access, which leads to these patients getting their primary care in emergency rooms and after hours, which, as you can suspect, leads to poor health outcomes because they're not getting their primary care in a primary care clinic where they really should get it. So we looked at a solution back in 2008, and we started with identifying myself at a director-level position in the hospital where I was empowered to go out and build some partnerships with other agencies in the community. I don't know about your political affiliation, but Hillary Clinton was right. It really does take a village of people to take care of this particular type of patient. One entity can't do it alone. So we went out and met with all the agencies that were already working with refugees and said, look, we'd really like to do some quality health care on these people, but we'd like to help. We'd like your help. We'd like to know what you're doing with them and how can we collaborate to do that a little bit better. We took our costs from hiring interpreters and hired our own patient navigators, which were essentially resettled refugees that not only performed interpreting for us, but they also helped the patients navigate through the system. And this involved calling them ahead of time for an appointment, calling back when the patient didn't show, leaving their cell phone numbers with the patient, following them to the pharmacy and explaining how to fill a prescription, working with them on transportation so they could understand how to get to a visit, explaining to them about preventive care and the importance of coming in even when you don't feel sick. We would have them follow them to specialist appointments, even if it was outside of our system. So they spent a great deal of time helping these patients navigate until they could get on their feet and move through our system a little bit better. In addition to our navigators, we hired a coordinator who could look over all the care of these patients. So we became a focal point for the health system where physicians in the system would contact us if they had any issues with these patients. Outside agencies would contact us if they had any issues. And we kind of looked at a patient-centered model or a population-based model. We knew everywhere these patients were going, what their show rates were, trends, and we were able to coordinate the care a little bit better. We developed a fail-safe in our model where refugees automatically get Medicaid when they arrive, and then at the six-month mark, they get a notification in the mail that they need to recertify for the Medicaid. It's in English. Nobody knows what to do with it. So we developed a system where the hospital is the authorized representative for them. When they come into the resettlement agency and sign all the paperwork, they sign a form that we get things mailed to them, to us from Department of Social Services. So we would get the notification that their Medicaid was coming up at the 6 to 8 month mark. Our navigators would contact them, help them fill out the paperwork. This played into the financial model a little bit in terms of keeping their insurance active so we could take care of them. And we worked on increasing capacity. We had, when we started in 08, we had no providers in the community seeing refugees. We did quite a few educational opportunities. Physicians naturally go to dinners and lunches and conferences. We started increasing the educational opportunities in the community, talking about refugees in general, about their ethnicities, about the medical care of refugees. We really concentrated on equal distribution of these patients. We had four urban clinics we were sending them to, so we made sure one particular provider didn't get too many. And then again, we acted as somewhat of a liaison with these physicians and with the Refugee Resettlement Agency. We paid for it through refugee health assessments. Most states have a program where there's a state mandate that they get an initial assessment. We view these assessments as kind of no-brainers. When they're coming into the primary care practice, they get a head-to-toe assessment anyway. We asked the primary care providers to fill out the paperwork for the state, which was essentially what they were doing anyway. Our department took ownership of this paperwork, controlled it, sent it into the state, got the money back. About 800 refugees a year coming into Rochester, our assessment money is $338 per assessment. So there's about $240,000 coming into the program from these assessments. We paid half of it back to the physicians as a incentive for seeing these patients. We kept the other half to just maintain our program expenses. And then from then on, they continued with Medicaid fee-for-service billing. So now, 4 years later, we have some new results. 96% of the refugees coming into our county are entered into a primary care practice. Nothing's ever 100%. We've tried and tried to figure out where that other 4% went. We can't find them. The revenue covers the cost of the program through the assessments. We now have 25 providers in our community that are open to new refugees coming into our area. And as far as we know, it's the only program in New York State that has hit this steady state where it's financially sustainable, we have plenty of capacity, and we can continue into the future seeing these patients coming into our community. A little bit about the future, thanks to New York State Health Foundation. Brian Bird is here from that foundation. They're funding some seed money to replicate this model in another community in our state. I've been down in Utica for about a year now working with them on putting this model together. It looks like it's working well down there, too. We've had some discussions about going up into Buffalo in a year or so and replicating the model up there also. One thing that came about from this, going back talking about educational opportunities, when we were putting on 2-hour conferences and 3-hour lunch and learns, we were finding physicians driving all the way up from Pennsylvania to attend these sessions. And we just discovered there were no educational opportunities anywhere in the United States around refugee health care. So in 2011, we started the National Refugee Health Care Conference, invited physicians and nurses and ancillary personnel from all around the country to do a 2-day conference around refugee health care. It was successful. This year, we collaborated with Canada and started the North American Refugee Healthcare Conference, ran a 3-day conference in Rochester. And then next year, in 2013, it's going up to Toronto. The website is on there. I think you'll get the slides. So if you wanted to check the check that out. I think I got a typo there. It's not June 8th through 8th. That's what happens when you do these slides at 4 o'clock in the morning. So it's June 6th through 8th, and then we'll bring it back down to Rochester in 2014. I am going to do a 2-hour workshop at that conference, kind of doing the nuts and bolts of this model, helping other physicians and other health systems in the country try to replicate this model. So if you're interested, that would be a good place to hear more about it. And I think my time is up, so I'm going to pass it on.